And what we want to know for today is that the Mishnah at the beginning of the third perek lists what's called Nashim Psulos. And the finish of the Mishnah, and the Gemara is going to spend a lot of time on this, is that even though this woman is a Psula, and you cannot therefore fulfill the Pasuk V'lo Siya Le'isha, which in Parshas Ki Tetze, the Torah says that the Ma'anes, if he rapes a woman who's a Naira Besula, that means she's from the age of 12 to 12 and a half, and she's never been married before, he has to not only pay a knas of Chamishim Kesef, he has to marry her, and the Torah says, Lo yuchal l'shalcha kol yomo, he's not allowed to divorce her. So the Mishnah wants to be machadish that even if the second part of the parasha, meaning the obligation to marry this woman, is not applicable because she's noshim psulos, she's someone who's prohibited to him, and we'll get to the list in a minute. Nevertheless, he still has to pay the knas. He has to pay the fifty kesef. And the Gemara is going to go through many different yalfuses to prove the independence of this aspect of ma'anis, meaning the chiyuv to pay the knas stands on its own two feet, even if he cannot be included in the mitzvah and the obligation to marry her because she's a noshim psulos. Now, obviously, when we learn the third parak of Ksuvos, we're going to have to spend a lot of time on this very fundamental issue about the chiyuv knas of ma'anes and the mitzvah to marry her in the case of ma'anes, but it may take us quite a bit of time until we finally get to that part of Perek Elunaris, because the part of Elunaris that we have to discuss is the situation of Noshim Psulos. So for example, the Mishnah begins with Mamzeres and goes on to the case of Nesina. Those are the first two categories in the Mishnah, which are Noshim Psulos, and we want to figure out what goes on in these two cases. Now, we have photocopies of number one, the Chassam Sofer, who lived about 150 years ago, and we have photocopies of the Mishkanos HaRoim, who I believe is alive and well today. And this book was published in the last 30 years. It's a kind of, I call it the green monster. You know what I'm talking about? The Otsim Mefarshei Talmud. Have you ever seen that? Those green books that anthologize all the commentaries? So that's what this Sefer is about. The reason why in yeshivas they call Otsim Mefarshei Talmud the green monster is because they want to discourage the young people from using that Sefer because it's confusing. I'm hoping that the Mishkanos HaRoim is not a green monster. But I don't know. You know, you're going to have to bear with me because so far I've learned all of two pages, actually not even two full pages, in the Mishkanos HaRoim. I found it yesterday. But again, we're doing experiments, and by trial and error, we're going to see if the Mishkanos HaRoim might possibly shepherd us, if you pardon the pun, through this parak. Okay. Now, as far as the Chassam Sofer is concerned, he's very interested in the case of Mamzeres. And he has a long discussion about Haba al Mamzeres. Part of this discussion we'll read inside, and we'll go through it. But before that, we want to talk about a principle which is very relevant to this parak of Elunaris, and that's called Kimle B'Derabamine. And again, Kimle B'Derabamine is a gigantic topic. We're just focused on one, you know, corner or one little piece of Kimle B'Derabamine, and that's called Eino Loke U'Meshalem. So we don't give him both Malkus and force him to pay. So if a person violates a criminal act for which he would generate Malkus, then we give him Malkus, but he is exonerated from paying the Tashlume Mama. Now, if we accept that principle of Eino Loke Meshalem, which is a fundamental principle of Masechta Malkus, of course, but if we apply it here to the case of Ma'anes, when we talk about Psulim, right? These are psulos. Then, l'chora, the first question we want to ask is, how could the Mishnah establish that he pays knas, in this case of ones, if he's going to get malchus? So we're going to have to assume he doesn't get malchus. And the Chasam Sofer is going to ask, why doesn't he get malchus? This question of why he doesn't get malchus is a very, very pressing question in the context of the Rambam. The Rambam has a major shita about a relationship between a Jewish man and a Jewish woman outside of the framework of wedlock, okay, outside of marriage. The Rambam opens up his presentation of Hilchos Ishus by telling us that Kodeh Matan Torah, a man would meet a woman, they would decide to have a relationship together, and that was what they had. Before the Torah came along, there was no such thing as a Kinyan Ishus. When the Torah was given, the Torah says, Ki yikach ish isha, that a marriage relationship is within the framework of Kinyan. And then the Rambam goes on to delineate three possible ways of acquiring, of creating this Kinyan, Kesef, Shtar, and Bia. And the Rambam then goes on to say that if a man would think he's before Matan Torah, I mean that's just my phrase, and he would go ahead and have a relationship with a woman without Kesef, Shtar, and Bia, meaning that his Bia was not L'shem Kiddushin, the Rambam says that he violates the law of Kedesha and he gets Malchus min HaTorah. And that's the Pasuk Lotia Kedesha Bibnos Yisrael. Now, the Rava disagrees based on our Mishnah here at the beginning of Elul Naris, and the Rambam is going to say, I'm sorry, the Rava is going to argue that how could it be that the Mishnah establishes that a Ma'anes Psula, right, which means that he can't marry her. So obviously, it's a relationship outside of the framework of marriage. Not, moreover, it's a ma'ane situation. Now, we'll get to mafat in a minute. But in that case, according to the Rambam, this violation would incur malchus under the law of losia kedesha. And therefore, the Ravid comes up with a new definition of kedesha, and that is that a kedesha is mufkeres u'muzmenes lakol. She's a woman who is dedicated to having relationships from one man to another man. If a woman, on the other hand, is dedicated to a relationship to one single man, even if it's outside the framework of Kiddushin of Kinyan, she becomes, according to the Ravid, a Pilegesh. And the Torah validates a marriage, so to speak, relation with a Pilegesh. So it's interesting. Whereas the Rambam completely rejects Pilegesh in the Hilchos Melachim, he has a special license or dispensation for a king of Israel to take a Pilegesh. But as far as a hedgehog is concerned, other than a melech, you can't turn the clock back to Kodeh Matan Torah, when a man and a woman would decide to be together to the exclusion of any other relationship, like she would not go with another man, and say that that's okay. That kind of non-Kiddushin, non-Kinyan relationship, which is called Pilegesh, is completely forbidden by the Torah, and it engenders a violation of a lav d'oraisa of Kedesha with Malchus. So the Ravid says, if there's going to be Malchus, then if a man is Ma'anis and Naira Basula, he's going to get Malchus for that. There's no possibility, therefore, of a Knas, because we have a principle called Eino Loke Umasham.
And that's even if the person is not a Isalav, just a regular woman. If somebody's Ma'anis, cannot...
Correct, but the point is going to be the following. If you could talk about Kiddushin, okay, now here we have a sugya, you know, you have to know everything to know anything, so I beg your resilience here, because I'm going to tell you the following. There's a sugya mesechta Kiddushin. The Chasam Sofer throws out Shas without blinking. And he rarely even tells you where it is in Shas. So, you know, to learn the Chasam Sofer is a tremendous challenge. He has a sugya, Mesechta Kiddushin, that quotes the Shita of Rabbi Zera and Reish Lakish also. Their Shita is that the case of Mefuta, which is again codified in Parashas Shoftim, in Sefer Shmos, not the case of Onus, which is in Kitese and Sefer Devarim, but in that case, he had in mind to marry this woman.
Uh-huh. that could be true here as well.
So if he had in mind to marry this woman, then there's no violation of the law of Kedesha. This is the Chassam Sofer's way of explaining how the Rambam could justify the Knas in the case of Mefuta, because Lechora it should be a case of Edelokim Mishalim in so far as he violates the law of Kedesha. So the Chassam Sofer comes up with this sugya in Kedushin, and the sugya in Kedushin has one man the Yom who says that the parasha of Mefata is talking about a case where he was Mefata L'Shem Kedushin, and therefore there's no violation of the law of Losia Kedesha. Now that some so fast to address another question, the parsha of Ma'anes. In the case of Ma'anes, the very fact that he's being Ma'anes so seems to indicate that he's not at all interested in Kedushin, hence he should be in violation of the law of Losia Kedesha, and hence therefore he should not be paying the 50 of a knas, because eino the loke who mishalim. And this leads us to the Ravid's position that the only violation of kedesha would be in a woman, in the case of a woman who's muzmenes lakol, who's mufkeres lakol.
But the Ravid's premise is not supported by the Torah itself. The Torah does recognize pre-Matan Torah ishus and pilegish, since there are such people in the Torah, say, embraces. So him saying that everyone who got married before Matan Torah is what's called a Pilegish is not true, because there is a Pilegish and someone who's at a higher level than a Pilegish. So how does
it
in the Torah? And the Torah recognizes that these people had Isha, and then there's so and so I thought Pilegish le Eliphaz, but I mean there's such a thing as a Pilegish.
And
so the fact is there are different categories. But they have to have different categories. Wherever they are, they're different categories. To say that everything pre Matan Torah is called Pilegish is not correct. There are, I think that so he has to explain what.
But again, in the Ravid's frame of reference, to say that the parasha of Ma'anes, or at least in the case of Mefata, which is a little bit more logical, is a case of Pilegesh, and if in the absence of Kedushin there is no violation of Kedesha. Kedesha refers to a specific woman. So the word Kedesha, Benos Tzur Kedeshos, is a description of a category of a woman. She's there in the, you know, the yellow pages, if you know what I mean. She's a Kedesha. She's Mufkeres Lakol. That's the law. And therefore, if a man would have a relationship with a woman that's not Mufkeres Lakol, and certainly in the case of Anusa, she's not Mufkeres Lakol, even in the case of Mefuta, she's only Mafkir herself to him, Mirtzona, then there's no violation of the law. Hence, I understand very well why he pays a knas. But what do you do with this parasha, if you hold like the Rambam, that if a man has a relationship with a woman outside the framework of marriage, that is a violation of Kedeshus. And the Rambam says, Hareza lokim in HaTorah. We had a Rambam here on the table, I would read it to you. I had it yesterday. Oh, thank you so much. I'll just read it to you. It's one of the most famous and enigmatic Rambams in history, so speaking of the history of the Rambam. So this is Perek Aleph Milchus Ishus Halacha Dalid, and the Rambam writes, Kodem Matan Torah Haya Odom Pogea Isha B'Shuk Imrotza Hu V'Hi Nosein Lo Schara Boel Osal Ema Derech V'Holech Lo. So you can have that relationship and that's it. They separate, they part ways. But he says, Mishen Nitna Torah Nesra Kedesha Leficha shenemar lotia kedesha vidosa leficha kol aboel isha l'shem znus below kedushin lokim in haTorah mivnesha bal kedesha. So again, we're not talking about a mufkeres lakol. We're talking about a man who has a one shot relationship with a woman l'shem znus without kedushin, and he violates this law in the Torah. L'chora, says the Ravid, mefata and ones would fit into that description. Hence, we don't understand how they can get Malkus and also pay at the same time. So you'll see that the Chassam Sofer, we'll see inside, he's going to come up with a very technical answer that maybe onus of a fact that there was no Asra, and therefore there's no Malkus. You know, that's sort of a kvetch teretz, you know, on a logistical level. You can come up with a case where a person violates a law, he should get Malkus, but he didn't get Malkus for a technical reason. The Edom didn't give him what? Asra. So therefore he pays the knas. You know, imagine that the whole parasha of knas has to be predicated on the assumption that there was no hasra. The Chassam Sofer is not happy with his answer for a different reason, a much more lavdisha reason. And he says that there's a concept called Chayvei Misa Shogigin. And he wants to apply the same rule to Chayvei Malka Shogigin. That even in the absence of a Hasra, well, let's consider you as a Shogig, we still say Ein Eloka Mishalim. That's an Achlok Shin Chizkia and the Chachamim. But let me just read to you the Hasogas HaRaivid. The Raivid writes, Ein Kedesha Ella Mizumenes Umufkeres L'chol Adam Aval HaMiyuchedes Li'ish. If there's a Yichud here to one man, Li'ish Echad, Ein Bo Lo Malkus V'lo Yisur Lav. And if she's, you know, exclusively dedicated to him, He Pilegesh HaKsuva B'Torah. Comes along the right, and he says, Im Kidvarov, if you accept the Rambam, is Mefate Heich Mishalim Aleha Mamon Valoloke Aleha. And the Chassam Sofer says that the right didn't even mention Ones. You know, in the case of Mefate, you could say it's a little bit closer to Kiddushin, but nevertheless it wasn't done L'shem Kiddushin, and therefore the right argues it would be, according to the Rambam, a Bias Nus, and hence the Bimalkus, and therefore Heich Mishalim Aleha Mamon Ela Vadai Mishahutzrecha Lepitui Eino Kedesha. In other words, he can't call her a Kedesha because he had to convince her to have a relationship. In the case of a Kedesha, she's Muzmenes Lekol, you don't have to convince her. You know, she has to convince you to pay the price, if you know what I'm saying. So therefore the Raivid comes to the
Ketana as well.
You want to know whether the Isra Lav of Kadesh would apply to Tana going to the right?
Mefuta can't be an adult, right?
That's a machlokus between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim. Our mission reflects the sheet of Rabbi Meir that Mefuta only applies to a Gdola, meaning a Nara. She's already 12.
Right.
But according to the Chachamim, once she reaches the age of 3, she's included in the Parsha of Mefuta. So if you have the Chassam Sofer, does everybody have a copy of it?
Yeah.
Again, we're not going to have time to go through the entire Chassam Sofer, but I just want to point out a few things. This is on the bottom of page 1.
What's the paragraph beginning?
It starts with Haba al Hamanzeres. And it's very good, Yechiel, that you have a photocopy of the original, because he doesn't quote his sources. Maybe in the original he'll tell you his sources, which would really help me a lot. So he quotes the Rambam, then he quotes the Raivid, and he says the following, how, this on the third line, if you have this photocopy, Mkei Mefuta Heich Mishalim Olem Mom and Alo Loke. You have that?
Yeah.
That's a quote from the Raivid verbatim. And then he goes on to say that Hu Adin Davi Motzi Lahakshos came me onus Heich Loke Mishan. The same question, the objection, the Rama of the Raivid against the Rama would apply to onus. And he could have said the same logic. Mirhutzuk Leonsa. Obviously, she's not Mufkeres Lekol. So we're talking about a woman who, from the Raivid's perspective, is not a Kedesha, she's not a Kedesha, hence there's no violation of the law of Kedesha, and therefore he pays Knas. But what about according to the Rambam? According to the Rambam's broader definition, that anyone who is not being married within the framework of Kiddushin is by definition a Kedesha, as far as this law is concerned, and therefore he gets Malkus. Why does he pay? Okay, now, did I give you back the Rambam, or I have it in front of my nose? Where is it? Oh, okay, fine. I never know what. Now, here's where the Chassam Sofer, I love this, because my Rebbe trained us, you know, to read a Rambam carefully, and whenever I see an Achman that reads the Rambam, you know, with a magnifying glass, I get excited about that. And he asks the following question. Listen to the Rambam. The Rambam says, Lefichah kol ha-boel isha. Now comes two words, which I want you to underline or put down in your notes. L'shem znus. Then the Rambam adds another two words. Below kiddushin. Lokim in HaTorah. So the Chassam Sofer, and he claims that it dates back to the time of the Ramban, wants to ask the following question. Let's read the Rambam meticulously. Why does the Rambam feel compelled to mention L'shem Znus and then say below Kiddushin? You know, the Rambam is very stingy on ink, so he didn't have to say both. If he would have said L'shem Znus, that should have been enough. If he would have said L'shem below Kiddushin, that should have been enough. What are these two categories almost that the Rambam is describing? So first he quotes the Ramban's answer to this question. And the Ramban wants to say that the Rambam, by adding the phrase L'shem Znus, is coming with a miut. What is this miut? The Rambam is telling you there's a certain case which is excluded from the Lav of Kedesha. What is the case that's excluded from the Lav of Kedesha? Even though the second condition was fulfilled, it was below Kiddushin, nevertheless, she's not a Kiddushin. Why? Because the Bia was not L'shem Znus. In other words, there is a Bia Znus, there is a Bia Shalom L'shem Kiddushin, but you could have a Bia Shalom L'shem Kiddushin, which is not L'shem Znus. And in that middle category, says the Ramban, there's no Iser Kiddushin. How could you have the absence of Kiddushin and it won't be a Bias Nus? That, according to the Ramban's interpretation, the Rambam is Pilegesh. A Pilegesh means that they have an ongoing relationship. They're designated him to her and her to him, exclusive of anyone else. But it wasn't L'shem Kiddushin. He didn't give her Kesef.
Consecrated by your relation, by having a physical
just the
event?
Oh, I don't know. That's a good question. At what point is the status of this marriage relationship engendered? You know, is it when they made the decision together, when they had yichud together, when they had bia together? I don't know. You know, what engenders pilagshus? Oh, so now let's see how the Ramban reads the Rambam. The Ramban reads the Rambam as follows. If it was below Kiddushin, does that make her into a Kedesha? Says the Ramban, not necessarily. You need another condition. It's got to be a Bias Nus. So if it's a Bias Nus, then it's going to be a Kedesha. However, what happens, yeah, L'shem Znus. What happens, on the other hand, if it was a Bia, L'shem Pilagshus, meaning that they are designated one for the other, this was not a one-shot deal, right? We used to call it in my youth a one-night stand, okay? We shouldn't use those terms, right? But he says, if it wasn't that, that's not called a Bia L'shem Znus. And that's called a Pilegesh. They want to have an ongoing relationship without Kiddushin. Now, how does that relationship terminate? I don't know. Is it just like it started, initiated by their agreement? Maybe if they have an agreement now, we're finished, goodbye. Maybe you need a miun. I don't know what you need. So if you take a look on page 2 in the Chassam Sofer on the top, he says, I'll read the bottom of page 1, just by Mesha Digde Karamban Beloshana Rambam Shekofal the Omar L'shem Znus Shalom L'shem Kiddushin Mashakosa Ramban the Osi, that the Rambam added these phrases L'shem Znus the Osi L'Ute Pilegesh, which is not L'shem Znus. I wrote that in my handwriting. I don't know if you have that on your photocopy, but anyway, Kfar Docha Kesef Mishnah. Because if Mishnah rejects the Ramban's interpretation of the Rambam, the whole Rambam hejot osur b'pilegesh. Now it's interesting. Where does the Kesef Mishnah, how does he derive this conclusion that according to the Rambam, hejot is osur b'pilegesh? It's not in Hilchos Ishus. Interesting. The Rambam in Hilchos Ishus, there's no indication that the Rambam prohibits pilegesh. But if you open up Hilchos Melachim, there the Rambam says that a Pilegesh is muteres to a Melech, but asur lehejot. And therefore, if the Ramban is saying that because this man and this woman decided to have this ongoing relationship without Kiddushin, therefore she becomes a Pilegesh amuteres, impossible. The Rambam could not, that pshat cannot be tolerated in the Rambam, because the Rambam holds that Pilegesh is only muteres to whom? No. To a Melech. Al-Kain. And now, at this point, the Chassam Sofer quotes the Rivash. The Rivash says the following. HaTorah Mayri, Shepita l'shem kiddushin. Yeah, I don't know how he's going to deal with Ones, but it's, as far as Mefata is concerned, we can say that the case in the Torah, there's an interesting ukimta. You know, it's bad enough when you have an ukimta on a Mishnah or on a Brisa. Now we have an ukimta on the Torah, and the Torah is talking about a case Shepita l'shem kiddushin. And the source for this rivash is a sugya in Kiddushin. Oh, here Itaki tells you where to find it. Memvav amin aleph. L'rav. That's according to Rav. And Hilchus HaKavase. And we accept the Shita of Rav. We're going to see soon that Rav Asi in the Gemara Kiddushin rejects Rav. But at least according to Rav, the entire parasha of Mefateh is addressing a case where his pitui was l'shem kiddushin.
What is pitui l'shem kiddushin?
In other words, he was hoping that as a result of this intimacy, she would agree to marry him. Now, would that be itself be bias issues, bias kiddushin, or it would only engender her agreement to kiddushin?
But there was no actual kiddushin there first.
That's what I don't know. It could be that if she agreed, then that bia itself is kiddushin, or it might be no. He was hoping that this would be the first stage in getting her to agree to marry him. Right, that has to be addressed. He says, "Lazed digdei karambam l'shem znus." Why did the Rambam add this contingency of that it's got to be a bia l'shem znus? Because the Rambam wants to tell you what would be a situation. The Rambam wants to tell you that if it's not l'shem znus, then there would be an understanding of the parasha of Mefateh. How would we understand the parasha of Mefateh? After all, Eino Lokim Misham. The answer is that Mefateh is talking about a case where it wasn't a Bia l'shem znus, and we're going like Rav that the parasha of Mefateh is talking about a man who is motivated l'shem kiddushin. That's his ultimate goal. If that's his ultimate goal, then it's not a Bia l'shem znus. It's very interesting because if you read the Rambam says kolabol isha l'shem znus. I mean, why did the Rambam have to add that phrase l'shem znus? This is my own. He could have said haboel b'ilas znus, and that itself makes her into a kedusha. No, the Rambam wanted to know what is his intention l'shem. Is he just having a fling? You know, he's just enjoying himself, or he really has in mind l'shem kiddushin, which again, it might not be that this bia itself would clinch the kiddushin, but certainly this bia is not a bia l'shem znus. And if that be the case, then the Rambam, by adding l'shem znus, is excluding from the lav of kedusha this very case of mafata, according to Rav's interpretation, that he's being mafat al menas she yisa ena al yedei pitui. So you know this pitui is a means to an end, and his agenda, his goal is that she'll agree to marry.
So if it's part of a courtship process,
Wow. It's a pretty wild idea that some sofer, but he has a gemara of Rav, and what motivated Rav to introduce this contingency that the case of mafata is mafata l'shem kiddushin, as you say, part of the courtship. Hoping if he's successful to clinch it with marriage. So, you know, in my mind, the thought occurs to me, I don't know why she would agree to marry this guy. Well, first of all, she agreed to have relations with him, so maybe that's on the way. But, you know, she could always say, if this is his way, this is his method of courtship, like that's all
but
the
then
convention.
He applies it to Onus, yeah. Where it's like he's just said.
Right, so we have to know about
they
Onus.
Know they're gonna force him, so that's already considered courtship.
Well then I don't know.
I mean non-Western concept.
You know, it's hard. Now here maybe in your Chassam Sofer he tells you where the next sugya is. He quotes another sugya here. And he says the following: the Afal Gav the Achakach Ma'ein Yemoin Aviha. I think what he's saying is, I think this is a sugya in Kiddushin in the second parak of Kiddushin, that a Nara for those 6 months, if you could check me out on this, we need a Gemara Kiddushin. During that 6 month period, if she decides to marry someone, yeah, open up if you can to the beginning of the second parak, maybe the second Amud. I think the parak starts on an Aleph, maybe. Right? That's So what daf are you up to? Mem Aleph?
Mem Aleph and Beis.
Oh, so on Beis, there should be all the way at the top, I think, there's a question of whether her father has veto power. No, it's not there. Maybe it's the next sugya. And if I'm not mistaken, the final maskana is that if she as a nara goes out and chooses her marriage partner, the father has veto power. That's called mil. And that undermines the kedushin l'mafreya. So even if she accepted kesef shtar or bia for kedushin, it's invalid if he's memayin. Oh, now the Chasam Sofer is working with the following premise, that in the parasha mafater, the father receives the 50 kesef, obviously because there is no marriage relationship. Right? If there's a marriage relationship, then there's no room for a knas. So why isn't there a marriage relationship? After all, Rav holds that he was mafata ha l'shem kiddushin, and she apparently agreed with her consent there should be a kiddushin. No, the answer is that the father was memayin. No, if the father was memayin, then igloy milsa mafreya that there was no kiddushin. So how can you tell me that mafata is a case of kiddushin? So he says, "Mikolakom tchilas pitui hoysa l'shem kiddushel." Even though he never succeeded, right? He could not. At the end of the day,
he didn't think it would be just a one shot. He was hoping it would.
He was hoping it would evolve into a full fledged kiddushin. He did not succeed in achieving his goal because if the father's collecting the knas, it must be the father objected to this kiddushin, and the father's miyun would invalidate the kiddushin. So memela, his bia was really a bias nus. So for no, that's not called a bias nus. Why? Because his intention, you know, it's like a phenomenology. You know, we look into his intention. In his conscious mind, his purpose was for kiddushin. Now, halachically, his bia is not a bias kiddushin in any sense at all because the father objects and the condition hasn't been validated. And therefore it's a bias nus. But it's not a bias nus because it's not a bia l'shem's nus. It was rather l'shem kiddushin. So a lot of chidushim here in the Chasam Sofer, and we still haven't gotten to the case of onus.
You mentioned that the boel has the kavana l'shem's nus. Is that right?
In the Chasam Sofer's frame of reference?
In general, you said before. So the Shem Zus is the das of the Boel.
Well, wait a second. That's the Raivid.
Well, I'm looking at the Rambam.
Let me clarify. The Raivid accuses the Rambam of a bias znus in the case of Mafata, and therefore he doesn't understand why the Mafata pays.
Take it out of the Mafata case. In a general case, what creates the Kedesha? His das, the Shem's nus, and below Kedusha. His das determines what she becomes, and that bothers me.
See, I'm thinking out loud here, Rabbi.
The Raivin makes a lot of sense.
Right.
You've cursed the call, she defines herself.
Right.
But now his bia defines her, you know.
Well, but that's why I think the Rambam is not operating with the assumption that Kedesha is a status, is a description of a woman. Lotio benos Yisrael kedeshos means let's not treat our women and our girls as if they were kedeshos. The Rambam is not classifying a kedesha as a status.
The definition of it, okay.
You follow what I mean?
Yes.
The Rambam is saying that the word kedeshos here is if you operate with, you know, a laissez-faire, you know, a hefker kind of attitude towards bia, and you allow for bia outside the framework of kedusha, you're going back to Kodeh Matan Torah. That becomes Latiyu Benos Yisrael Kedeshos. You're treating like the most. The Raivid understands that Kedesha is a status. It's like a Chalushev. She becomes a Kedesha because of her decision to this.
So I just wanted to clarify too. Maybe it's the same sort of question I'm asking. It sounds like that Chasam Sofer is saying that if it was not the Dafka L'shem Znus, then everything else is not L'shem Znus. It doesn't
right.
have to be l'shem. Even if it's not l'shem.
You need a l'shem znus to make it into a violation of the law of kedusha.
Right.
And here he's interested in marriage. That's not called l'shem znus. Again, even the Chassam Sofer wouldn't have had the chutzpah to say such a thing if not for the Gemara in Kiddushin. You know, he has to have a peg, he has to put his hat on some peg. Since Rav says in Kiddushin that the case of Mefata is what? Let's read the language. Is Meir L'Shem Kiddushin. Therefore, we could say that the Rambam would hold that in the situation, the scenario of Mefata, there is no violation of the law of Kedesha because there's no Bi L'Shem. The shame's nus. His interest was, as I like Sam's terminology, of courtship. But now we take a look at the case of Onis. What's going on in the case of Onis? So he says the following: Hu adin ba Onis, kevin sheyada sheasidim lachufo, that he will be, as a result of this, be forced to marry her. Again, she has veto power, but he meets it. He has no decision making process. Lo sia leisha, havi leha beila almanas sheyisa osa. He also understood the boel that ultimately he would marry this woman. Again, he's hoping that the father will agree that he marry her. You know, the father may have vested interest to agree in this case, because you can imagine what her situation would be like. Right. I mean, you know,
she's forbidden everybody after this.
Well, I don't know about forbidden, but she's paguma. I would use the word. You know, she has a certain blemish.
Damaged virtue.
Right.
I mean,
so again, in his mindset, he thinks that this is a great way of marrying this woman. Again, you know, all this sounds so foreign to our society.
Western.
You know, to rape a woman in order to marry her, but you know, because he says, "Havilei abiila meikara al menashe yisosa." The us lekamalkus mishum kadesh. That's how he wants to defend the Rambam from two parshas in the Torah.
So the Rambam would hold that just because, as long as he has that day, even though the father said to him beforehand, the chance of you marrying my daughter is zero.
I don't know. Okay. No, you're asking very intelligent questions, Al. What if we change the scenario in such a way? But again, what we're saying is that according to Rav, in the Gemara Kiddushim and Vav, both Onis and Mefata are talking about a man whose goal is to marry this woman.
So it's all on the boel.
All on the boel. And since it's on the boel, it wasn't a Be'il Hashem's Nus. If it wasn't a Be'il Hashem's Nus, therefore it's not included in this Lav of Kedesha. So that means even though he had this Be'ilah and it's outside of the framework of Kedushin, the second condition of the Rambam was fulfilled in order to violate the Islam, meaning L'shem, Shalol L'shem, Shalol L'kiddushin, what's the language of the Rambam? Below Kiddushin. But the first condition of the Rambam, that his Be'ilah was L'shem's Nus, has not been fulfilled. Hence he doesn't violate the Lav, there's no Malkus, and he pays the Knas. But Hine Lefizeh, what about Rav Asi? Rav Asi is the antagonist of Rav in the Sugyan Kiddushin. And Rav Asi holds that Krolomairi Bilshem Kedushin. No, he didn't convince her to agree to this relationship because he wanted to marry her. Now, we don't know that Rav Asi holds like the Rambam that you get Malkus for Bias Nus under the Lav of Kedesha. But on the other hand, we would like to have Rav Asi free of all shackles. We want to have him perhaps accept the Rambam Shita. The Rambam understood that this was, you know, this was absolute, and the Rambam has his rayas from various sources. So let's assume that Rav Asi, back in the time of the Gemara, he also accepted the Rambam. So then we're back to square one, because here it's clear that in Mefata this is not a Bi'al Hashem Kedushin, it's a Bi'al Hashem Znus. Hence, how could it be possible of Loke Umeshalim? Again, you hear what he's doing now, the Samsung. It's a very interesting methodology. I never heard this from my Rebbe. He never would do such a thing. But what he's doing is he's churning up possibilities in a cholent. And let's churn up Rav Asi in the Gemara Kedushin, Membav, together with the Ramam in Perek Aleph Hilchos Issurei Bi'ah Loch HaDalet. And when you combine them together with the Sugya that we're going to get to in Eilun Aharis, is Eino the Bloke Umeshalim, how do we understand the Parshios of Onis and Mefata? And here's where he pulls his very technical, what I call logistical answer, and that is Tzarech Lomar de Muki Kra. The pasuk is referring to a case of Delo Asri Bei l'malkis. There was no hasra for malkis. But that's not enough. Because what's the status of an avera which, if it would have been performed with a hasra, it would generate malkis, but there was no hasra. So the Ksam Sofer adds the following proviso, and he says, "De chayve malkios shogigin chayov chayovin b'tashlumin." If you want to underline those words, as I'm going to do for myself, de lo k'Reish Lakish. Now Reish Lakish is of the opinion, and again, this is really Chizkiah, but an extension of Chizkiah. Chizkiah says that let's say you violate Shabbos and you destroy someone's haystack, but you did it b'shogeg, meaning you didn't realize it was Shabbos. Everybody have the case? He burnt down Yenim's Gadish, his haystack, on Shabbos b'shogeg. So Chizki is of the opinion that he doesn't pay damages, meaning we look at the Avera per se, and this Avera is a cardinal sin that would generate Misa, and we don't care whether or not Lemaisa he did it in a way that he would be Chayav Misa, meaning B'mezid, even if he did it B'shogeg, we apply the principle of Kimlei B'Deramim. Now, Reish Lakish in the Gemara here in Eilu Naris is going to take take it one step further. He's going to apply it even to Chayvei Malkiyah Shogigin. So if a man violated a lav, like in this case Kedesha, and he didn't have Asra, so let's assume he was unaware of the lav, he's a Shogig, nevertheless the Aver per se, had it been done B'mezin, would generate Malkis, and we apply now the principle of Ein Elokim Mishalim. So the Ksam Sofer has to add another proviso here. Not only are we assuming that there was no Asra, but we also have to assume that it's not the Avera in abstract that knocks off the Malkus, it's the Avera Befal. In other words, will he get the Malkus? The Chi of Malkus Befal. If he has a Chi of Malkus Befal in actuality, because he was forewarned, then it knocks out the Chi of Tashlumin. But if on the other hand, I would hold that like Reish Lakish, namely that the abstract definition of the Avera is enough to knock off the Malkus, it's not the Befal, so then even if there was no Asra, which may make him into a Shogeg, he would still be part of from Tashlumin. Then we're back to square one and we don't understand the parasha of Onis
U'Mefa. It's possible to say that Malkut is in play, that automatically the Tashlumin falls off.
That would be Reish Lakish. That if Malkus is like it's like out there in the on the back burner, so to speak, meaning that
lurking
lurking in the shadow. The only issue is that we weren't able to clinch it to clinch the deliberate nature of his violation, right? But the violation itself is potentially a violation that leads to Malkus. That's enough according to Reish Lakish to knock off Tashlum. So therefore the Ksam Sofer's answer cannot be reconciled with Reish Lakish. We're going to have to assume that no, you need the Malkus Befal, and here there was no Asra, so you won't get Malkus. As long as he's free from Malkus, then he'll have to pay the Malkus. Okay, Ramosa. That's as far as the Ksam Sofer is concerned. Now I want to see if we can test the waters on this Mishkanos HaRoim. Okay. So for anyone who, for one reason or another, was a little distracted for Hakafa Aleph, we're starting a whole new Shia, Hakafa Beis, and we want to know about a Nesina. So in the list of Psulos in our Mishnah, after Mamzeres comes Nesina. Now, who is a Nesina, or what is a Nesina? So let's begin with Rashi, which I have here somewhere. Of course, I misplaced it. Does anybody have the Rashi for me? I'll give it right back to Yosef. I can borrow it. Oh, thanks. And Rashi says the following. Nesina mina givonim. Okay, so these are one of the nations that occupied the land of Israel. Today they call them Palestinians. Okay. V'hi asura l'kol. And you're not allowed to marry this woman. Now, Rabosa, if I tell you you're not allowed to marry this woman, what do you mean you're not allowed to marry this woman? Because she's one of the seven nations? She's a Goyita. So obviously Rashi's talking about what? Liacha Geirus. That means that even though she underwent Geirus, nevertheless you're not allowed to marry her. Why is that so? So Rashi says, the David Gazar Aleihem. We're talking about Xeras Bezdin Shel David, Kidamrinam B'Yavamos, he quotes a Sugi Yavamos, and he says that this Xera of David was an extension of the Xera of Yoshua. Now, just from an etymological perspective, why are these individuals, this nation, why are they called Nesinim? Why not just call them Givonim? They came from Givon, within the boundaries of Eretz Yisrael. Of course, they pulled a dupe job, a fake job, right? They camouflaged themselves as if they came from far away because they realized that, you know, Yeshua is conquering the land and they'll all be destroyed. So Rashi says, you know why they're called Nesinim? Al Shem, based on the pasuk at the beginning of Tanakh, it says, Vayitneim Yoshua Chotvei Eitzim V'Shoavei Mayim. So already back in the time of Yoshua, when he finds out that he was duped by them, they camouflaged themselves, then already he declares that they will be servants to the Jewish people. And David HaMelech extends this. Now, Rashi doesn't quote the entire sugya in Yevamos to tell us exactly what David added to Yoshua. What was this two-stage process? So we'll get to that in just a minute, because the Mishkanos HaRoim is going to quote a Rambam that explains what David added to Yahushua. But before we get to that, let's just derive what I call the bomb here of Rashi. Rashi is dropping a bomb, and he's telling you that the whole institution of Nesina, who cannot enter into Kahal Yisrael, you're not allowed to marry her, is all based on Gzera. That makes it into a Drabbanan. I'll give this back to you for the meantime, but might be Almanas Lahaksi. So in this sefer called Mishkanos HaRoim, he tells you that Be'inyan Nesina, Isur Nesina, Matsinu Arba Shitos Berishon. And he starts, of course, with the Shita of Rashi. So Rashi writes here in the beginning of the third parak of Ksubas and elsewhere in Yevamos, did David Gazar Aleihem. Now, what is the source for this Rashi? It's a pasuk in Yoshua. I'm sorry, it's a pasuk in Melachim, and it says, "Devagivonim lo mi bnei Yisrael hema, klomar einam ruuyim lavo bekohal." And why is that? Because David decided that we're not allowed to marry these people. Okay, now here, I don't know. I tried to underline the next line. I don't know if. Yeah. Depends whether you have the photocopy before I underlined the rift, I don't remember. He says that Kosu Atosvis here and also in Yevamos, the Rashi Sphirale, this is the key of keys, the Mina Torah Ein Hanesinim Asurim. Now again, what does that mean, Ein Hanesinim Asurim? You know, if you're talking about a woman that comes from a different nation, a different... she's not Jewish. I don't have to tell you that she's Asura. Yeah, but the answer is, me'achar shen is gairu. How could it be that in a Torah you're allowed to marry this woman? The answer is that she underwent gairus. And from Rashi's perspective, apparently, we don't question the validity of the gairus. We're going to see that other Rishonim are bothered by this. You know, what motivated the Givonim? They didn't have a tremendous love for Judaism. Right, Geri Arayot. So then, if they're just afraid of Yoshua and his mighty forces, they'd already taken over, Yericho. That was a major military success, and then afterwards, it was a little bit less of a major city, but it was I remember the battle. So at that point, the Givonim show up, and they want to convert. What does that mean? What do they want? They want to just be part of the Jewish people to the extent that they will not be decimated by the Jewish people. But Rashi doesn't seem to have a problem with that. At the end of the day, they underwent conversion, and they are interested in becoming part of the Jewish nation, and the Torah validates their gerus. So there's no reason why you can't marry an Essena. V'rak mishum gzeras David nesru. David saw what kind of low lives these were at the time of David HaMelech. They elicited very cruel behavior, and he says we got to exclude them from the Jewish people. This is called a gzeras David. And he says, v'cheni shitas haRambam. If I could ask you to open up the Rambam.
It's right here. It's not there.
Oh, it's not Kedusha. There's only Noshim here? So we need another volume, Kedusha. And the Rambam is going to write in Perek Yud Beis, Mehilchos Yisurei Bia. And again, we'd like to see this inside. Mishan is Gayer Mishiva Amamin. Einam Asurim Min HaTorah Lova B'Kol. So it's really interesting, you know, according to the Rambam, when Yoshua is fighting the battle here, and the Torah says, Lo Sechai Kol Neshama, then that's under the assumption that they're not interested in becoming Jews. If they want to become Jews, you know, it's like every member of the seven nations has a choice. He or she could decide either to fight a battle against the Jews, refuse to accept the Jewish religion, and then it comes under the Lo Sechai Kol Neshama, or to convert. And the Rambam says that we can recognize that conversion. And by the way, don't ask me about Amalek, whether conversion of Amalek is valid to remove the status of Mocho Timcha Ezech Amalek.
So.
All right. That's a Gemara Gittin about Ben Bonim Shal Hama. Anyway, so Adavi Yaduish alone is Gairu Mehena Elah HaGivonim. So of all the seven nations, there's only one branch of one of the seven nations that actually was Misgai. Those are the Givonim. But according to the Rambam, these Givonim, insofar as the fact that they converted, they are allowed to marry into the fold. The Oshua Gozer Aleim, says the Rambam, Sheyu Asurim Lovo Bekol Echad Zchorim V'Echad Nekevos. So the Rambam understands that when it says in the pasuk that vayitnem Yoshua lechot ve'etzim lechot ve'mayim, it means at that point already Yoshua instituted the gzerah that the givonim could not marry into the Jewish fold. John, you know what I'm going to say to you, of course, when you give me a book.
Open it.
We have this ongoing thing here. V'lo osar osan. Oh, so now the question is, what did David HaMelech add to Yoshua? So he says, V'lo osar osan ele bizman sheyesh migdash. Thank you so much. Okay. So the Rambam says the following. That Mishan is Gayer Mishiva Amamim Einam Asur Min HaTorah Lova B'Kol V'Adover Yadu Shalom is Gayer Mehem Ela Givonim V'Givonim V'Yoshua Gozar Aleim Shiyu Asurim Lova B'Kol Echetz Chor Mefet Nekevis V'Lo Osar Osom Ela Bizman Shiyesh Migdash. Alright, this requires a lot of work, which I'm not prepared for. If anybody wants to do this research as we're speaking, I would appreciate that.
Yeshua only has to learn Shasam.
Right, why? I don't know what. What is some deeper understanding? What's the Shaykhah Siv Bizman Sheish Migdash? And that's how the Rambam interprets the Pasuk Chofe Eitz and Meshove Mayim. Again, the Rambam's perspective, it's very technical. You have to know the deeper meaning of this, but the Rambam is saying that as long as the Migdash stood, we needed Chot Ve'etzim V'Shovei Mayim. So that when Yoshua instituted this Isur Lova B'Kol and made them into Chot Ve'etzim Chot Ve'etzim, that's only to serve in the Migdash. But once the Migdash was destroyed, then we could marry. So Bizman HaZeh, according to the Rambam, at least from Yoshua's perspective, we could marry the Givonim, the Nesina. But then the Rambam says that Bar David v'gazar aleim sheli kansu l'kal b'kal li'olam afil bizman She'en Migdash, V'chein Mefurish Bi Ezra. Okay, fine. V'lama Gazar Aleihem, if the original enactment of Yeshua had expired, so why did David see it fit to extend that, even beyond that? It's kind of like the Sfaradim, you know, why did they extend, or the Ashkenazim, maybe why did they extend the Chair for Beit Gershom, which terminated at some point? Okay. I always say one wife is, you know, that's more than enough. But anyway, so he says, V'chein mefurish b'yed v'lama gazra aleihem hu beis dino l'fi shera azus v'achzorius shahayso v'hem b'eis shebo shebikshu. Okay, you have to, you know, in Tanakh here, shivas b'nei shol b'chir Hashem litlosom v'hargum v'lo rachmu aleihem, and therefore he was marchik them. So basically today we cannot marry a Givoni, a Nesina, because of the Gzera of David HaMelech. The original Gzera of Yeshua terminated. So let's just summarize this entire paragraph. We have now the sheet of Rashi here and in Yevamos, together with the sheet of the Rambam and Yisurimbiya. The whole Iser from beginning to end of Nesinim is all Drabbanan. Rashi mentions the Gzera of David. He doesn't go into detail. He says, Vayitneim Yoshua Chotvei Eitzim V'Shovei Maim. He doesn't tell you what the nature of that Gzera was. The Rambam spells this out, and he tells you that the whole Iser of Nesin is only Drabbanan, and Yoshua was the one who was responsible for the Gzera that we're not allowed to marry these Nesinim, and David HaMelech just extended it beyond the Mikdash. Now we get to the second Shita. Shitas Rabbeinu Tam. Also, here and in Yevamos. Nesina Asura Min HaTorah. Okay. Now, wait a second. If you're talking before Gerus, then of course she's Asura Min HaTorah. That's upgrade. Hell, the answer is it's even after Gerus. No, if it's after Gerus, how could there be an Issa Torah? I assume this is the Rambam, Rashi and the Rambam's objection here. If it's before Gerus, I don't need a law for that. You know, so Elowat, it's after Gerus. So if it's after Gerus, so why can't you marry them? So the answer is, it's a Gzera of Yoshua and David. But Rabbeinu Tam is willing to say A and B, which seem to be antithetical, and that is, number one, the Iser is Dorais, and number two, even though there was Gerus. Now if he's going to tell you Geri Arias Hain, that we don't recognize the Gerus, he doesn't have
back to square one.
Yeah, he doesn't have to invoke the Pasuk Lo Tischatin Bam. He's saying that there's a separate law that the Torah enjoined us from marrying the seven nations that occupied the land, even after Gerus. Mind-boggling. Again, this is a Doraisa look. We're not talking about Gzera. I mean, obviously, according to Rabbeinu Tam, we have to come to grips with the following question. What was Yoshua and what was David HaMelech? What were they adding to the picture? Because already on a Doraisa level, the Torah commanded Lo Tischatin Bam as a separate lav referring to whom? To the Zion Amamin, even after Gerus. The Gerus is meaningful. It's not Geri Arias, because again, if it's Geri Arias, then throw out the whole institution of Gerus here, and this woman is a shiksa, you know, that I don't have to discuss. But the answer is no. She's a Jewish woman by virtue of the Gerus, but the Torah says Lo Tischatin Bam. Why? Because they come from these nations.
But that's a contradiction in terms, because Gerus means part of the Kahal.
Mitzri is also.
So I'll tell you what, Yosef, I think is going on here. I don't want to chap the tzi, because I think, again, I didn't read much of the Mishkanos HaRom, but he has a paragraph later on, which I'll read it to you when I find it, but I think he's going to say what I'm going to say now, so I don't want to steal from him. But I think there are Tzvei Dinim in Gerus. Gerus, number one, engenders Kedushas Yisrael L'Inyan 613 mitzvahs. That's number one. Then there's another din in Gerus, and that's called Mishpachas Yisrael. Like Ruth says, Elokayach Elokai, Amech Ami, Elokayach Elokai. There could be a split between the two. That is Elokayach Elokai, for all religious purposes, the Gerus is Chal, and engenders a Chiyuv of Tayyig mitzvahs. you may be able to call up that person for an aliyah, and maybe you can, you know, you can even appoint them as the shliach tzibur. But there's another din of Amech Ami. And with regard to Amech Ami, which is called Mishpachas Yisrael, here's where the Torah says that there's certain nations in the world could never become Mishpachas Yisrael, no matter what they do. They could stand on their head, you could have Geirus in front of, you know, the Satma Bezdin, I couldn't care less. They could not be, they don't have a din of Mishpachas Yisrael, and the Nafkamina is Likanes Lakal. So let's just see first on a technical level what Rabbeinu Tam says. Rabbeinu Tam says that with regard to the Nesinim, despite their Geirus, the Torah imposes a law of Lo Tischatein Bam. Now Lo Tischatein Bam means that you can't marry them. The Giyusan, if it was because they were not, they did not convert, Les Lu Chasnus, you can't say Lo Tischatein Bam. There's no chasnus between a Jew and a non-Jew. So the answer is there is chasnus, but the Torah prohibited it. So what did David come along and do? Apparently David wanted to give teeth, you know, he wanted to give a little extra chizuk that to this richuk, to be marchik the people of Israel from the Nesinim. So what did he do? Gazar aleihem shibud. He decided that they would be, well, in this case of a female, let's say she'd be a shivcha. And Kadesh lo yitavu be Yisrael, there wouldn't be any admixture. In other words, he needed some sort of sociological separation between them and us, so to identify that nation and all their descendants for all times as Nesinim. So how did he effectuate that? Because again, you know, this law of Lo Tischatein Bam is such an amazing chiddush. You know, we're going to call up this man for an aliyah, and then we're going to say the Jewish girl can't get married to him. Right? There's one dimension of Geirus, but not the other dimension of Geirus. So David HaMelech looked for a method by which it would be crystal clear that these people are separated from us. That's called Shelo Yitamu B'Yisrael. He tells you on the footnote that you should look later on in the Os Lamed Zayin. Okay, fine. Shita Shlishit. Okay, now we're up to the Ramban. Lo Asra Torah B'Girusam El Leger Rishon. Interesting. The Ramban is on the turf of Rabbeinu Tam. We're talking about an Issa D'Oraisa B'Girusam. Even after their Geirus. Mm-hmm. And again, at this point I would say, so why did, you know, why did David HaMelech have to step in to the picture over here? Comes along the Ramban with an unbelievable chiddush. Lo Asra Torah B'Geirusam El Leger Rishon. Right? So you've got Harry or Jane who are Nesinim, they're the Givonim, and they undergo Geirus. Right? Could you or I marry Jane?
No.
Is that Doraisa Derabonan? Doraisa. Lo Tischatein Bam. But Bam means you can't marry Jane.
Yeah.
But Jane could marry Harry. Right? Because Harry is a ger from the Givonim and Jane is a ger of the Givonim. I'll give you a simple case. Again, there could be many different permutations here. The child, okay, let's say the child of this marriage we'll call her Miriam. You know, you can marry her. Why? Because the Iser of Lo Tischatein Bam is addressing the generation of Yoshua, that first generation. The Torah says don't marry that first generation. They were the ones who, again, this is just for a drasha before Musaf, but they were the ones who polluted the land of Israel. We got to get them out of our marriage relationship. The next generation already met Tmimim. You know, this little Miriam was born to, you know, we'll change his name from Harry to Yankel, and we'll change Jane's name to Orit, you know, say we'll give her a modern name. And Miriam was named Miriam at birth. Miriam you can marry, but not the first generation. Now, Rabosai, just before your question, Yosef, can you quote another precedent to a case of a nation that you cannot marry this nation for one generation and only for one generation? There ain't no such thing. There's Mitzri, there's Adomi, but that That is three generations. This one generation deal is the fiction, is the figment, so to speak, of the Ramban's imagination. Meaning, the Ramban is creating a whole new entity, which, again, maybe I'm wrong about this, but to the best of my knowledge, doesn't exist in halacha. A one generation iser bias kol, the geiris is valid. But the Torah says, lo tischate bam, in this generation, once you get to the second generation, then there's no Iser Chit.
But my question is, once they're Gerim, Lotit Chaten Bam applies to them.
But not to the next generation. So if they marry each other...
No, they can't marry each other because each one of them is also to marry one of them.
No, the Iser is to allow them Knisa Lakal. They themselves are Givonim as far as Knisa Lakal is concerned. So their Gerim would be Mater one to the other and the child is already the next door. Comes along David HaMelech, and what does he do? And he says that I'm going to make a gzeirah enactment, Iser Olam, that for all generations, all their descendants will remain gerim, but they can't marry into the Jewish faith. That's the Rabbanan. The original Iser of Nesinim during the time of Yoshua was Doraisa, under the law of Lotus Chatevo. But once the gerus is achieved and we skip to the next generation, fast forward to the second generation, then there's no Issa Doraisa here, is where David steps up to the plate, so to speak, and he introduces a gzera of an Iser Olam. So today we cannot marry Nesinim. But why can't we marry Nesinim? Well, according to Ramban, that's going to be Durabonim. According to Rabbeinu Tam, today we can't marry Nesinim because of the law of Lotus Chatimpon. That's a Doraisa. Again, David HaMelech used a sociological, psychological ploy to guarantee that we would stay away from marrying Nesinim, even though generation upon generation they've been part of the Jewish fold, so to speak, but we're not going to marry into them, and therefore he made them into Mishubadim, into Avodim and Shvachos. But according to Ramban, if I would want to marry a descendant of the Givonim, I'd be allowed to marry that girl on a Doraisa. It's David HaMelech who instituted an Iser Olam. Again, I assume, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong about this, that David HaMelech standing on the shoulders of Yoshua. He says, "Uvechol makom sheshaninu nesinim yesh b'mashma ger echad min ha'umo salolu shenizgayer." In other words, he's the first generation of Gerim. But the second generation, that's not called Nesinim. Again, this is a very difficult, technically a difficult ukimta, that whenever you see the word Nesinim in the Torah, in Shas, it's a reference to that first generation. After that, they're not really Nesinim, because the Iser of Lotus Chatimpon only applies to the first generation, not beyond.
They're defining the law of Lotus Chatimpon for everybody?
No, it's only for all seven nations that occupy the land.
And Yeshua modified it specifically for the Givonim, or he's just clarifying what.
Yeah, only for the Givonim. The Givonim exhibited a very cruel kind of behavior.
So how does that happen? Says the Arisa. Once you have someone who's post the Arisa modifying or converting a
wait, what are you asking? You feel like
I asked him why this is on the Arisa level.
No, it's not.
No, according to Rabbeinu Tam, according to Ramban.
Oh, you going back to Rabbeinu Tam, or you're
or
the Ramban?
Why Ramban is built on Rabbeinu Tam. You said that.
No.
First generation Mian Torah.
Yeah. Right.
On what basis is that?
I mean,
was whether Yeshua came around or not. For sure. Yeshua's law is not for one generation.
I'm not following.
I said, where does Yeshua have the right to modify? This is the Arisa Min HaTorah. Either by
I would say to modify. I would say to extend it. To extend it. In other words, the Torah says that this Iser only applies for one generation. Yeshua is going to say it's going to apply for all generations.
So that's true for all the Shivam, according to this definition of Los Estados.
I don't think so. I think his Gzer was only on the Givonim, as far as I know.
The fact that it's only for one generation applies to all Shivam. And then Yeshua said, but you guys are going to extend.
Excellent.
And therefore, I can institute it on the Oraisa level, even though I'm not the Oraisa. I'm Yeshua.
So
the Rabbeinu Tam wants to say that this is on the Oraisa level for how many generations?
All generations.
But even though Iser is not all generations.
No, because
he holds differently than Rabbi.
Correct. He holds all Tischatin Bom means these seven nations are excluded forever and forever ever with all the Gerus in the best.
Yeshua didn't do anything.
Yeah, he looked for I call it a harchaka. He looked for a tool to guarantee, because again, since Rabbi Tam recognizes the Gerus, as the Ramban will as well, so, you know, we're going to call it up for Aliyahs. Right, they're going to be, you know, if you're a Hebrew teacher, you know, in a Hebrew school, and you're teaching bar mitzvah boys, you're going to be teaching these givonim, these nesidim, for their bar mitzvah. You follow what I'm saying? They're very much on the cutting edge of the Jewish community, because
but you can't marry.
So how do I separate? You know, over the course
how do people live in that community?
Over the course of time, you know, generation after generation.
Yeah, because
how are you gonna guarantee that we don't?
You can't.
Oh, so the answer is
we don't even know a woman like a stay.
Listen for a second. Yeah. We made them into shvachas. We made them into avodah. That's what David HaMelech achieved. You don't marry an Evan. You don't marry a shivcha. In fact, I'll tell you the truth. I believe that the people of Israel, I mean the Jewish people through the generation, they didn't even realize that these were that this. You know, they thought that, you know, over the course of time they began to relate to them as shvachas and avodim, because that's what David HaMelech made them. So again, let's go over what's the nafkamina between the Ramban and Rabbeinu Tam. The Rabbeinu Tam understood that halacha of lot, the lav d'oraisa of lotus chatin, applies through all generations. The descendants of the Zion Amamim through all generations are also love of a call with all the gerus in the world. And again, David HaMelech wanted to make sure that that would be upheld and that would be implemented. Masha'en can coin to the Ramban that Isur of Lotus Chatin Bam applies to one generation and one generation only. Once we get to the second generation, we can marry them on a Doraisa level, but David and before him Yoshua, they wanted to exclude them, so they made an Iser of marrying them for all generations. Now, the Ramban has a logistical question, because not logistical, excuse me. The Ramban has how would you say in English, parshanut, a semantical issue. Where does it say in the Torah that this Isur of Lotus Chatim is for the first generation only?
Yeah, exactly.
So the Ramban has I love this Isur. He says that with regard to all other nations that are excluded, the Torah always tells you that it's either forever or for X number of generations. If the Torah hadn't qualified that, then the assumption would have been it's only for one generation. Mm-hmm. So it works like this. Let's say in the case of Amon Umov. Yeah. So the Torah adds the words Ad Olam. Okay, we have to open up a Chumash here. I think it's in what parashah is in Kitetze, wherever it is, right? Lo Yovam Ad Olam, all the Torah Secha. So the Torah is always going to tell you that this is for all generations. When I talk about an Amon Nevo, I might mean the male, and then the whole controversy about the females, and that gets Rus and Tov Tov. Why did the Torah say Lo Tiskatein Bom, period, and not add the words Ad Olam? Like it did in the cases of Amon and Moab.
Right.
Or in the case of Mitzvah Adomi, Dorash, Shlishi, Omeid, or whatever the pasuk is. So the answer is, in the absence of that qualification, you're innocent until proven guilty. And innocent means Lo Tischatim Bom enjoins you only for the first generation. So I just want you to be aware of the fact that the Ramban doesn't believe, as I said to you before, that this is a figment of his imagination.
Right.
That he came up with an Iser of marriage.
And the Ramban counts this is one of the Targum Mitzvahs. The Mitzvahs only know who just
married. I assume. That's only knowing when?
In the first generation.
That's an excellent question. I mean, if you go back to the Shroshim or the Rambam says that we only count an Iser that is Lidoris.
Why wouldn't it apply today? If somebody comes around from there.
Because he was born from somebody.
Well, who's
going to know?
Now, this would be interesting, Yechiel, if you don't mind helping me in this research project. You have to open up the Rambam in Sefer Mitzvahs and see if the Ramban has any commentary in Sefer Mitzvahs.
Ramban doesn't count this one.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. The best way of... This is not complicated. We don't have to second guess. This is simply a matter of research. You know, in today's Rambams, which it's... looks exactly like this, part of the same set.
In the Sefer Mitzvahs.
So you'll see that he goes Keseder Parsha. He gives you a table of contents. So if you look at the table of contents, see where the Rambam codifies Lo Tischatein Bom, and see if the Ramban disagrees. That would be an interesting an interesting project.
Then
we're up to the fourth sheet. Let me just, because I have 15 minutes left, this is a testing ground for the Mishkanot Sforov. He's on trial here, so to speak. Not himself, but I mean for me. I want to know if I can.
Who is this guy?
I don't know if he's a guy. I mean, he's definitely not a girl, if that's what you mean. But his name is Shlomo Kravitz. More than that, I can't tell.
Because there's a Ketzayne Chassidus.
You're good at that, no? Tell me who Shlomo Kravitz is.
There's a Ketzayne Chassidus, you know.
He's a what?
There's a marginal Chassidus in front of the Eid HaRei that's called Mishkanot HaRoyim. Rabbinowitz, they're fanatics, they come from visions.
Oh, okay.
I don't think it's them.
No, it used to be a famous, what kind of store was it? I think a stationery store or something like that called Kravitz. You remember that? Anybody?
Yeah, sure.
Still around.
He's still around? I bet you he's from that family. I can't promise you. Anyway, now we get to the rival. Okay. Now the Ramban quotes the rival. For Ravid Pirish did be Gerusam Osram Hakosuv. Now when you read those three words, you get the impression that the Ravid is on the same turf as the Rabbeinu Tam and the Ramban, namely that the Torah says despite their Gerus, there's still an Easter of Lotus Chati, but whether it's for all generations or for one generation, name, that's not what the Ravid is saying. Meaning at the time of Yoshua,
so he's challenging the Gerus itself.
Exactly. Until now, we had no question about the Gerus. Rashi and the Rambam accepted that Gerus from A to Z, you know, the whole nine yards, and therefore we're allowed to marry them on a Torah level. Rabbeinu Tam says we won't accept their Gerus, even though it's an absolutely valid Gerus, as far as Bi'ul HaKol is concerned. The Ramban said, well, for one generation, we won't accept their Gerus as far as Bi'ul HaKol. But all the Rishonim that we had until the Ravid agree that the Torah validates the Gerus of the Givonim, of the Nesinim. Comes along the Ravid and he says, Nain, that Gerus was a falsha Gerus. It was a dupe. They were only interested in Geri Arayos, in protecting their skin.
Right.
Which is
if that be the case, then basically, what's the status of a Nasin or an Asina? A Shiksa. She's not Jewish. If she's not Jewish, so what's Yoshua and David all about? What did they have to introduce all those Gzeros? Says the Ravid, just give me one second. The Yoshua vid David Gazra Lehem Shalone Kabel Mehem Gerusli Olam. Wow, this is something we haven't encountered now. Now we're giving a mandate, which is coming from Yoshua and David, about whether we can accept Gerim from these nations. So let's say, for example, Yoshua is in year one. Let's fast forward to year 1,000. So we're 1,000 years beyond Yoshua.
Right.
Now a descendant of the Nesinim comes forward and says, I want to become a Jew. Well, the original Gerus was a bluff, but we're 1,000 years beyond that. Yoshua and David says, never ever do we want their Gerus. Kidei. Now here I think there's a printing mistake. Lufiani is dyke. It should be Kidei Shalolis Arib Yisrael. That's my humble opinion that the word Shalol somehow got omitted. I don't know. I can't promise.
I think it's just modifying. Lo dekabel mehem gerim leolam kidei litarib Yisrael.
Because if we would accept. Yeah, you're right. You're right. You're right. Yeah, he's right. I'm wrong. Yeah, Yosef, you're right. Forget about that. We'll cross out the last two ones. Yeah, it's not Shalol is Arab Yisrael. It is lo nekabel mehem gerim leolam when they through their gerus want to mix into the Jewish bloodstream, right?
Kidei is the wrong grammatical term then.
Okay. Mikomakom stomon kitchilosanhem. Now I'm trying to figure out what the Ravid means by this phrase stomon kitchilosanhem. Can I just suggest my own? Or you want to suggest? Good, you tell me. I don't want to.
They were fakers at the beginning and they're still fakers.
Excellent. That stomon, but here I want to emphasize the word stomon. Stomon means unless you know otherwise, you can assume and you have to assume that the whole thing is a bluff. Why do I emphasize this word stamon? Because I want to ask you the following question. What happens if today a descendant of the Nesinim, again, if we can trace their the lineage, I'm just a hypothetical question, would come forward and want to be Miscaya out of total sincerity? They're not marrying anybody, they're not interested in X or Y or Z, they're not afraid of the Jewish people. They really are totally serious. I have a suspicion that in this case, the Ravid would accept them as given. In other words, the Ravid is saying, Stoman meaning if we don't know otherwise, we assume Kitri lost in him. I don't know. I'm not sure. And again, I'm putting my neck out here on the line. V'im Tomer and Cain, Lomolem Knas. Now, this is unbelievable. The Ravid is really stuck with his back against the wall. Our Mishnah is talking about cases of psulos that collect knas. Okay, you want to say that there's a gzera d'rabbanan according to Rashi and the Rambam that you're not allowed to marry them. You want to tell me that the first generation according to Ramban you're not allowed to marry them, and then there's a d'rabbanan after that. But in all these cases, the gerus is a valid gerus. It's the Ravid who's the first rishon in the whole sit who says that the gerus is a bluff. No, if the gerus is a bluff, who are you giving the knas to?
The sheiks.
And do you remember the Gemara at the beginning of Ksubis? The Gemara says, how can we give a knas to a non-Jewish woman? She'll go and use the money to bow down to the man in the monastery, right? To paganism. The Imtomer came Lovele Knas. That's like a TKO question, right?
Yeah.
The Mishnah says that Nesina gets Knas. Why does she get Knas? She's a Goyeter. So the Ravid takes this question and he deflects it back to the Makshal. And he says, oh, and without my pshat and Nesina, you're okay with this Mishnah? Ulatimecha ktoni akusis yeshlev knas. The Mishnah says that akusis gets a knas. Who's akusis? Akusis is Gary Arias here. They're not Jewish women. So this touches on our whole chakira about what's the purpose of the knas. Is the purpose of knas to protect, so to speak, compensate the victim, or is the purpose of knas a penalty on the violator, on the boel? He says, "El halacha kulam gerim hen." Okay. Now we have to understand what he means. Okay, halacha kulam gerim hen. So I, in a sense, I think I jumped the gun, as we'd say. I thought that when he says in his opening line, Lefisha hei mitchilosam begeris rishon ki geri arayos, I thought he meant that there's no validity whatsoever to their geris. Correct? It's totally invalid. And that led him to the question of lomalem knas. You know, why should they get a knas? So he turns around and he says, what about akusis? So here the Ravid says the following. And the author of the Mishnah of Rome tries to embellish it with the brackets. You see, he says, Kavanosol is sugi the Yvonis Chav Dalid, the Ketoni Vaisa, Echad Geri Arayis, Vi Echad, etc., etc., etc. Enom Geru Maskinon, and the Gemara comes to the conclusion that the Halacha, and this is Rab, the Halacha is Kediri Omer Kulam Gerim. Okay, now how can it be that on the one hand you call him Geri Arayis, and the other hand you say the Geris is valid? Are they Jewish or are they not Jewish? Right. Is the Geris valid or not? And the answer is that Geris is a very complicated entity. It's an enterprise which lends itself to yes and no, A and not A at the same time, meaning there are dimensions of Geris that could be Chal, even if a person is not in the least bit interested in embracing Judaism, and there are other dimensions which are completely excluded. But the basic status of the individual as a Jew, again, you have to know how this would impact, for example, on laws of Shechita and Stam Yenam and so forth and so on, but the basic status as a Jew is effectuated by a Geirus even when it's Geri Arayas. Again, the Gemara didn't propose that up front, but it was Rav who, at the end of the Sugya, won the day, and he insists that even Geri Arayas are considered Geirim. Now again, are you allowed to marry them? No. But can they collect the knas? Do they have the status of Jewish people? The answer is yes. Va'kosuv osron li'oson sheva umos me'oso gerus shebishas kibush lefisha dayin adukim bi'akum. So in other words, the Torah says, you know, this is almost like Darshin and time of the Krah. On the one hand, we're saying that these people converted, and we're going to say kulam gerim, even though they converted for the wrong reason, for the wrong motivation. But on the other hand, the Torah is going to say, don't you dare marry into them. So the Ravid comes up with a azaj rasha, you know, almost like a philosophical point, a psychological point. And he says that since they never gave up their adikus, you know, to avodah zarah, therefore we don't want to marry them. But again, it's not Xavier the Rabbanu, this is the Doraisa. He's saying time of the Krah. Why does the Pasuk say lo tischatei bom? And the answer is because we don't want them as full-fledged gerim, because they're not full-fledged gerim. They are only partial gerim. V'im chazru, here I want you to underline the next thing. V'im chazru v'kiblu osam bebezdin li achar mikan mutarim hoy. Here he says that according to Torah law, lo tischatei bom means we don't consider their gerus serious. Not in the first generation and not in the 15th generation. However, if they would come in front of a bezdin a second time around, and I'm not sure in which generation he's referring to, and they would accept the Torah on their own volition during the course of history, meaning we're not under the, you know, the fear, they're not standing under the fear of Kaf Aleim, you know, Yoshua's conquering, he's Kilchok HaShor, he's swallowing up the whole of the land, all the nations of the land. No! They want to come forward on their own initiative. It's according to the Torah law, you would be allowed to marry them.
There you go.
But here is where we have Yoshua and David. Now let's understand. The Ravid has a serious problem with Yoshua and Dov, because the Ravid holds that for all generations they cannot be Jews, and we cannot marry them. Again, are they Jews? They're Jews. Yeah. But we assume that their Geirus is Storon Kitchilos on its Geiria Rice. What's the status of Geiria Rice? The Torah says, Lo Tischatein Bom. They're not allowed to marry you to the Jewish folk, so what do I need Yoshua and David? And the answer is, in a case of Chazru v'Kibbalah, some of the Bezdin, they show up in a Jewish court on their own volition, with their own initiative, because they want to become Jews. And therefore, on the Torah level, in such a case, we would not apply the principle of Staman Kitchilasan, and we would recognize their Geirus in the fullest sense, not as Geiria Rice, which is a partial Geirus, but we'd embrace them as part of the Jewish community and allow them to marry into our fold. Here's where we have the Gzeira of Yoshua and David. Mishum Desnan, V'Yisurav, Yisur Olam, Mishum Hachi, Prishu Allah, She David, Gazar Alem, Gzeira Zu. So the Gzeira of David, what is the impact? It's going to be for a case of one of the descendants of the Givonim who comes on his own initiative with a serious, genuine desire to be a Jew, to convert. And now we're going to say, no, there's a gzera, and we're not going to start making distinctions. We're always going to assume Staman Kitchilosan. So let's say Staman Kitchilosan takes you from 0 to 90%. Now you have that 10%, that little slice with a ray of hope at the end of the tunnel, of those 10% of the Nesidim who really genuinely want to be Mizkayah. Here's where David HaMelech made the Gzeri. He says, we're not going to make these distinctions. We're going to take the 90% and we're going to extend it from Staman to Kulam. Kulam Kitchilos and Domi. We don't want to accept a Geirus, and therefore they're excluded from Geirus. In the next paragraph, he speaks about the Nafgimina, and with this we'll conclude. Do we have one more minute?
Literally
one more minute? Okay. The Nafgimina, Ben Shitas Ramban, Lashitas Arayvin. According to the Ramban, only the first generation of Geirim are excluded under the law of Lo Tischatein Bom. Whereas according to the Ravid, as far as marriage is concerned, well, for all generations, we're not going to accept their Geirus. They only have that partial Geirus of Geiri of Arayus. The Ramban is going to say they have a full-fledged status as Geirim, but we can't allow them to marry during the first generation. And that was the Xeris HaKos, and the Torah says the first generation you can't marry. Okay, Rabosai? I don't know what's going to be after this, but so far I hope you agree with me, that the Mishkanos of Rome has done us a great a great service.
So like Mark,
David?
You wrote the book in 10 years and you finished it 17 years ago. Shlomo Kravitz. I get nothing more.
So how long was the project, it says? 17 years?
No, I think like a little more than 10 years.
10 years he worked on this sefer.
Three fat volumes.
Wow.
And he's not
jealous.
He's not part.
No, I'm all spread out. He took the bull by its horns, and I'm going to take 10 years of my life to dedicate it to one.
And he's not part of the Ricardo. That's another fact.
I wonder if his response is since that time, since the time you were showing. And if so, what is the halacha today? First of all,
you don't know
who a Malach is, you don't know.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah,
it's also the Gemara and Brachos.